Vanchakaputurubhyascha kripasindhu vaibhacha Patitanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah. Dhruva Maharaj has gone back home, back to Godhead, and he did not go alone. He took his mata, Suniti, with him. We then heard the glories of Dhruva Maharaj and the results of hearing the narrations about Dhruva Maharaj and how they award all, everything that one wants to the person who takes part in hearing them. Then in the next chapter, in chapter 13, after hearing about Dhruva Maharaj's going back to Godhead, we heard about his descendants. And the reason why that came up was that some of the verses in glorification of Dhruva Maharaj were mentioned by Maitreya as they were spoken by Narada Muni in the assembly of the Prachetas. So Vidura asked to hear about the Prachetas. And in the course of describing about the Prachetas and answering that question, Maitreya Muni began to describe the descendants of Dhruva Maharaj, because the Prachetas are in that line of descendants from Dhruva Maharaj. So after mentioning Dhruva Maharaj's sons and their sons and possibly their sons, it came to a Maharaj Anga. His wife was the daughter of death, not the daughter of Yamaraj, but the daughter of death personified, and she was, as one would imagine, not the most qualified of wives. Imagine being married to death. So, practically speaking, Anga Maharaj didn't have any children in this marriage, and he performed the sacrifice, and by the result of that sacrifice, he had the facility to have a child, and there was some sweet rice of some sort that was given to his wife, and as a result, a son was born, and this son's name was Vena. And he possessed the qualities of his maternal father, maternal grandfather. That means if his mother was the daughter of death personified, he possessed the qualities of death himself. In other words, although his father, Anga, was a very pure and exalted person, he himself, Vena, was cruel, harsh, and horrible in every way, possessing all bad qualities. And then it described in summary how he was eventually killed by the sages. So now, this pastime of Vena Maharaj is going to be described, and how he is going to be killed by the sages. And then from the body of Vena will be born Prithu Maharaj, who is called Adiraj, or the great, or the greatest king, or the original king, rather, the original world king. So now in chapter 14, Maitreya begins to describe about to Vidura about Vena Maharaj. So first, when Maharaj Anga understood the qualities of his son, he became so disturbed. He tried to change him by punishment, by talking to him, etc. Nothing would work. And he realized how much he was going to suffer, and he became so detached from the kingdom that he went to the forest. So there was no king at that time. But everyone knew that Vena was not qualified to become king because of his great cruelty. So, in any case, as Maitreya explains, the great sages headed by Bhrigu were always thinking of the welfare of the people in general. There was no king, there was no ruler at this time because Anga had gone to the forest. When he saw that in the absence of King Anga, there was no one to protect the interests of the people, they understood that without a ruler, the people would become independent and non-regulated. Without proper administration, the people just think, what the heck, we'll do whatever we want. And then they get themselves into so much trouble. So I'll read some of the verses, and then we'll read some of the purports. And in this chapter, and for some time, what we're going to hear about is the proper system of good government. We're going to hear about it by hearing how bad government is. And Prabhupada, in his criticisms, is scathing, and he gives the recommendations for how to make proper government. But this is what we're going to be hearing about for some time, quite a few chapters perhaps. Even Prithu Maharaj will be hearing about what proper government is and what the purpose of government is. Because in this current age of economic rationalism, people think that what is good for the economy is necessarily good for the people. But the Vedic system obviously is quite different. The system is what's good for the people's development of Krishna consciousness. That is the methodology by which society should be governed. So the society is governed based on the principles of vanashrama, which are like a support or a net that help the citizens gradually develop their love for Krishna, their taste, their attraction, their attachment to Krishna. But because we need mental activities, we need social activities, we need cultural activities, we need intellectual activities, everyone can't just renounce everything and become fully engaged in hearing and chanting. It's just not possible. It's just no one or very few people can actually do that. So certainly society, the people in the world in general, can't do that. So what is needed is a social system that doesn't drag people downward in consciousness, that doesn't degrade people in consciousness, but a social system that is going to intellectually, emotionally, be organized culturally, so that people will gradually make advancement in their spiritual life. That is the purpose of culture according to the Vedic system. And again, it's quite opposite of contemporary civilization, which has economics as its central goal, and they think that the problem is basically economic, and that every solution will come through economic arrangements. That people will be happy if their economics are taken care of. So anyway, that's so Prabhupada's going to be speaking about that a lot. But what I'll do is I'll read some of the, because the purports generally aren't very long, so what I'll do is I'll read several of the verses, and then we'll go back and read some of the purports because the themes are quite similar. So the sages saw that with Anga gone to the forest, there was no administration, there was no ruling. And therefore, the people were starting to go mad in sense gratification and doing whatever they wanted. So the great sages then called for the Queen Mother, Sunita. That was the name of the mother of Vena, the wife of Anga. And with her permission, they installed Vena on the throne as master of the world. And this was in spite of the fact that they knew that he was cruel. But all the ministers, however, disagreed with this. The ministers disagreed that it was proper to install Vena. But the sages wanted to do it, and they did it. It was already known that Vena was very severe and cruel. Therefore, as soon as all the thieves and rogues in the state heard of his ascendance to the royal throne, they became very much afraid of him. Indeed, they hid themselves here and there as rats hide themselves from snakes. So that's not a very complimentary metaphor to either the thieves or the king. The rats are compared to the thieves, and the king is compared to a snake. That the rats don't come out when there's a snake present doesn't say anything glorious about a snake. So Vena put fear in the heart of the thieves and rogues, and they didn't engage in their nefarious activities. When the king ascended to the throne, he became all powerful with 8 kinds of opulences. Consequently, he became too proud. By virtue of his false prestige, he considered himself to be greater than anyone. Thus, he began to insult great personalities. When he became overly blind due to his opulences, because unless one is exalted in consciousness, there's a saying that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely or completely. So he became his, because Vena was not at all pure, and he was very proud. When he was given so much, he had so much power himself, and when he was had so much control, he became mad practically. He became blind. Why is that? Why is it said he became blind due to his opulences? What is, when a person who is blind, he cannot see. So what couldn't Vena see? His very relative and small position. Rather, he became proud. So King Vena mounted a chariot, and like an uncontrolled elephant, he began to travel through the kingdom, causing the sky and earth to tremble wherever he went. All the twice-born brahmanas were forbidden henceforth by Vena to perform any sacrifices. No sacrifices could be performed, he said. And they were also forbidden to give charity or offer clarified butter. No offering sacrifices, no giving charity to the people or anyone, no offering ghee in the sacrificial fires. Thus King Vena sounded kettle drums throughout the countryside, and thus proclaimed his rulership and his superiority. In other words, he stopped all kinds of religious ritual. So we'll stop there and we'll go back and read a few purports. So we understand what's happened in Vena. Vena was very vain. He was very proud. And he thought that I am the controller here in this kingdom. He was cruel, proud, severe. And he stopped all religious rituals, but he also stopped the thieves from stealing, which was the purpose of installing him on the throne. So here are some of Prabhupada's purports. Purport to the first verse. In this verse, the significant word is Chema Darshana, which refers to those who are always looking after the welfare of the people in general. All the great sages, headed by Bhrigu, were always thinking of how to elevate all the people of the universe to the spiritual platform. Indeed, they advised the king of every planet to rule the people with that ultimate goal of life in mind. The great sages used to advise the head of the state or the king, and he used to rule the populace in accordance with their instructions. So the sages, they did have a relationship with the government, but it was indirect. Their mentality or their mind, or they were fixed on spiritual life and doing what was good and for the people in general. So, but they would not rule, because when one rules, one tends to get involved in passion. So therefore, they wouldn't rule. They would advise the kings, who would rule more or less on their behalf. So the great sages used to advise the head of the state or the king, and he used to rule the populace in accordance with their instructions. After the disappearance of King Anga, there was no one to follow the instructions of the great sages. Consequently, all the citizens became unruly, so much so that they could be compared to animals. That means they acted with no higher purpose in life. Animal is just concerned with the base instincts of survival and enjoyment. No higher purpose, certainly not. So the people became like that. So as described in the Bhagavad Gita 4.13, human society must be divided into four orders according to the quality and work. In every society, there must be an intelligent class, an administrative class, productive class, and worker class. In modern democracy, these scientific divisions are termed topsy-turvy. And by vote, sudras, or workers, are chosen for administrative posts. Having no knowledge of the ultimate goal of life, such persons whimsically enact laws without knowledge of life's purpose. So the society, again, is to be governed so that people make advancement in spiritual life. So for that to work, or for that to be the goal of society, those who rule society have to have a spiritual goal. Otherwise, how can they judge what law is favorable to enact and what law is unfavorable? Just like if one is trying to go from here to Melbourne and driving, or something like that, then one has to... Or rather, when one knows his goal, like driving from here to Melbourne, then one can decide which route is better, and which route will take us in the exact wrong direction or out of the way. One can if one knows the goal, one can clearly decide upon the route and what's right and what's wrong, what's good and what's bad, what's favorable and what's unfavorable to get to the goal. But if one has no idea about the goal, then one will enact a law that could easily take the people in the opposite direction. That's like, imagine trying to decide whether you should go left or right without first deciding where you want to end up. Well, I think we'll go left. Oh, let's go right. No, let's go left. Okay, we'll go left for a while, and then we'll go right. And then we'll make the traffic lights will make a left and then another right, but you don't even know where you're going. So the sage's job was to make sure that the goal was always kept in mind, and they would advise practically the kings, the rulers, in such a way that the citizens would gradually be brought to the goal. This they should do, this they shouldn't do, etc. So all the citizens, without anyone to tell them where to go, they became unruly like animals. And therefore, the Prabhupada explains that without life's purpose, without a varnashrama system, without some class of people being trained specifically in what the goal of life is, and another class how to rule properly, the result is that no one is happy either in this life and the future. It's quite gloomy for people. And you can see that more and more people, rather than becoming satisfied, people are becoming more and more unsatisfied, no matter what they have. So in the second verse, Prabhupada explains when the people are, if there's no strong ruler, when the government is very weak, one of the things that happens is rogues and thieves flourish. Similarly, when the government is very strong, all the thieves and rogues disappear or hide themselves. There will always be a class of people who have the mentality of thieves and rogues. It's just a matter of how prominent they're going to be and how much they're going to terrorize the citizens. When the government is strong, they hide. They don't show themselves. Why? Only one reason, fear. These kind of people, this is the only language they understand, fear. So they're afraid of the strong government. Not to take the mood, oh, you poor, depraved person, you're so unfortunate, you must have had a problem with your mother or your father or the place where you grew up or this or that. No. doesn't work like that. So when the government is weak, rogues and thieves flourish. Similarly, when the government is very strong, all the thieves and rogues disappear or hide themselves. Of course, Vena was not a very good king, but he was known to be cruel and severe. Thus, the state at least became freed from thieves and rogues. When the king ascended to the throne, his opulences were manifest. Opulence means power, vibhuti. So he had mystic powers, because one can't govern properly unless one is very powerful. As Prabhupada once said, that an ordinary man cannot be king of the world. It takes someone who has extraordinary power, and to do it properly has to be basically directed by Krishna himself. So this Vena, again, began to insult people because of his pride. And then he finally stopped all the sacrifices, all religious rituals. Prabhupada's purport to that verse, when he went to the countryside with his drums and saying that I am the ruler and no one should worship anyone else. Here's Prabhupada's purport. What was committed by King Vena many years ago is at present being carried out by atheistic governments all over the world. The world situation is so tense that at any moment governments may issue declarations to stop religious rituals. Eventually the world situation will become so degraded that it will be impossible for pious men to live on this planet. It means if you have any sensitivity to what is good and what is bad, it will become the worst kind of torture just to be alive and watch it. And then hunted, you know, the people will be hunted. And this is happening in different parts of the world already. So crazy. Therefore, Prabhupada's conclusion is, this is what Kali Yuga is going to come to. Therefore, what should we do? People, sane people, what does a sane person mean? A person who has things in the proper perspective. He's not intoxicated, he's not crazy. He knows he's going to die. He has the understanding that spiritual life is the purpose of his existence. So therefore, sane people should execute Krishna consciousness very seriously, so that they can go back home, back to Godhead, without having to further suffer the miserable conditions predominant in this universe. Okay, text 7. So the sages saw what was happening with Vena, and they assembled together, and after observing cruel Vena's atrocities, they concluded that a great danger and catastrophe was approaching the people of the world. Thus, out of compassion, they began to talk amongst themselves, for they themselves were the performers of the sacrifices. So they were directly affected, because Vena's order was that no sacrifices could be performed, and the sages were the ones who were the performers of the sacrifices. So they were very upset. So they were very upset, and Prabhupada explains in the purport, before King Vena was enthroned, all the great sages were very anxious to see to the welfare of society. When they saw that King Vena was most irresponsible, cruel, and atrocious, they began to think of the welfare of the people. They were not selfish. It should be understood that sages, saintly persons and devotees, are not unconcerned with the people's welfare. Ordinary karmis are busy acquiring money for sense gratification, and ordinary jnanis are socially aloof when they speculate on liberation. But actual devotees and saintly persons are always anxious to see how the people can be made happy both materially and spiritually. Therefore, the great sages began to consult with one another on how to get out of the dangerous atmosphere created by King Vena. So when the sages consulted one another, they saw that the people were in a dangerous position from both directions. Such a wonderful analogy will now be explained. They were in a dangerous position from both directions. When a fire blazes on both ends of a log, The ants in the middle are in a very dangerous situation. Similarly, at that time, the people in general were in a dangerous position due to an irresponsible king on one side and thieves and rogues on the other. So the sages were caught, because if they got rid of Vena, the thieves and rogues would harass the citizens. And to get rid of the thieves and the rogues, they put Vena in, and he harassed the citizens. So they were feeling very sad on behalf of the citizens. So thinking how to save the state from irregularity, the sages began to consider that it was due to a political crisis that they made Vena king, although he was not qualified. But alas, now the people were being disturbed by the king himself. Under such circumstances, how could the people be happy? The sages began to think within themselves, because he was born from the womb of Sunita, King Vena is by nature very mischievous. Supporting this mischievous king is exactly like maintaining a snake with milk, they thought. Now he has become a source of all difficulties. Now why are they saying it's like maintaining a snake with milk? Because if you take care of a snake and treat him very nicely and you feed him milk, even if you crush up bananas and put honey in it, the milk, and you really work hard to be kind to the snake, the poisonous snake is going to bite you anyway. So the sages, and maybe even kill you with his poisonous bite. So the sages were considering that this Vena is just like a snake. After all, who made him the king? The ministers didn't want him to be the king, but we thought, okay, let him be the king. So it is due to our grace that he's the king, but he is like a snake, although we're maintaining him. He's being maintained by our grace. He has no appreciation, and he's biting and killing. No appreciation, rather just pride. And look, he's stopped the sacrifices. How will things go on? We appointed this king Vena, king of the state, in order to give protection to the citizens, but now he has become the enemy of the citizens. Despite all these discrepancies, we should at once try to pacify him. We should try to cool him down, make him see reasonably. By doing so, we may not be touched by the sinful results caused by him. In other words, they were thinking, I have put him in place. We have put him in place, and he's doing horrible things. He's doing sinful things, so we're going to catch some of the reactions for the sinful things that he's doing. So they became frightened from that side too. So the sages continued thinking. Of course, we are completely aware of his mysterious nature. Yet nevertheless, we enthrone Vena. If we cannot persuade King Vena to accept our advice, he will be condemned by the public, and we will join them. Thus, by our prowess, we shall burn him to ashes. So he will, if we're going to try and give him good advice on not to do the horrible things that he's doing. And if he doesn't follow that advice, the people in general will gradually condemn him, and we will join them. So the people have their way. Of course, in the olden days they would never do it, but nowadays when the happiness of the people aren't served, what do? That's the first step. Then they revolt and they drag him down one or another and kill him, off with his head or something or another. But the sages have a direct way too. Their anger is manifest through a Brahminical curse, which is so powerful they can kill just by their anger. They can bless, they can kill. Here's Prabhupada's purport. Saintly persons are not interested in political matters. Yet, they're always thinking of the welfare of the people in general. So how could they... They're not interested in politics, but they want to help the people. And the people... There needs to be a political system with proper administration, otherwise the people suffer so much. So this is somewhat of a puzzle. Consequently, they sometimes have to come down to the political field and take steps to correct the misguided government or royalty. However, in Kali Yuga, saintly persons are not as powerful as they previously were. They used to be able to burn any sinful man to ashes by virtue of their spiritual prowess. Now saintly persons have no such power due to the influence of the age of Kali. So that's called a curse. Indeed, the Brahmins do not even have the power to perform sacrifices in which animals are put into the fire to attain a new life. Under these circumstances, instead of actively taking part in politics, so what should they do? So Prabhupada is bringing it up to date now. Now what should saintly persons do? They don't have the power to walk into the government and say, here is our advice, you please take it, otherwise it will spell your doom. So what should saintly, wise people do out of their compassion for the citizens, that they don't want the citizens to materially or spiritually suffer? So saintly persons, Prabhupada explains, under these circumstances, should engage instead of in politics, but in chanting the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna. By the grace of Lord Chaitanya, by simply chanting this Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, the general populace can derive all benefits without political implications. So the great sages, having thus decided, they approached King Vena. They thought, first, let's talk to him. Concealing their real anger, they pacified him with sweet words and then spoke as follows. They said, my dear king, we have come to give you some advice, good advice. Kindly hear us with great attention. By doing so, by listening to us, what will be the result? Your duration of life, your opulence, your strength, and your reputation will increase. Those who live according to religious principles and who follow them by words, mind, body, and intelligence are elevated to the heavenly kingdom, which is devoid of all miseries, but thus being rid of material influence, they achieve unlimited happiness in life. So they're saying that you please follow our words and only good will come to you. Only good will come to you. And Prabhupada explains in the purport that it is the duty of the king or government head to act, to set the example so that the citizens will follow the example. Naturally, it's follow the leader. And my favorite story in that regard, even on something simple, is there was in the 60s, there was the popular president, John F. Kennedy. And to his inauguration, he didn't wear a top hat. Usually it's a very formal occasion, so the president would wear a formal hat. But he didn't do so. And immediately, the hat sales around the world, or especially in the United States, completely dropped. And the hat makers of the unions or whatever, they really complained, you have to be seen wearing a hat. This is. Because naturally, it's just natural. What the executives do, the common people follow. So it's a great responsibility. So they're telling Vena, if you act properly, all good will come to you, all opulence will come to you, reputation, strength, long life, and you'll be setting the proper example for the citizens to follow. So please, we've come to give you good advice. Oh, great hero, they were actually angry inside, but they spoke very sweetly to him. For this reason, you should not be the cause of spoiling the spiritual life of the people in general. If their spiritual life is spoiled because of your activities, you will certainly fall down from your opulent and royal position. So they're in a sweet way, they're threatening him. If you spoil their life, you're going to fall down. What they're not saying is, we're going to make you fall down. By our strong words, we're going to pull you down. But, so they're just speaking sweetly to him. Prabhupada explains in a short purport. Formerly, in practically all parts of the world, there were monarchies. Are you going to vote yes or no on Saturday? That wasn't a real question. But gradually, as monarchy declined from the ideal life of religion to the godless life of sense gratification, monarchies all over the world were abolished. However, simply abolishing monarchy, getting rid of it, a monarch, and replacing it with democracy is not sufficient. Here is Prabhupada's vote. He's voting for neither. It's not sufficient. Both are insufficient unless the government men are religious and follow in the footsteps of great religious personalities. So he's voting no to everything because both options will not actually help the citizens, or both options will not change anything actually. Still, there'll be rampant materialism, and the state will not be, it will go in its godless way. So Prabhupada is voting against. The saintly persons continued. So they're saying, if you don't help the citizens with your spiritual life, you will fall down from your position. The saintly persons continued. When the king protects the citizens from the disturbance of mischievous ministers as well as from thieves and rogues, he can, by virtue of such pious activities, accept taxes given by his subjects. So please note, I'll read that again. What is the prerequisite? What is the king's duty? Which, upon fulfilling that duty, allows him to take taxes. When the king protects the citizens from the disturbance of mischievous ministers as well as from thieves and rogues, he can, by virtue of such pious activities, accept taxes given by his subjects. Thus a pious king can certainly enjoy himself in this world as well as in the life after death. We'll read the first paragraph of Prabhupada's purport here. The duty of a pious king is described very nicely in this verse. His first and foremost duty is to give protection to the citizens from thieves and rogues, as well as from ministers who are no better than thieves and rogues. Formerly, ministers were appointed by the king and were not elected. Consequently, if the king was not very pious or strict, the ministers would become thieves and rogues and exploit the innocent citizens. It is the king's duty to see there is no increase of thieves and rogues, either in the government secretariat or in the departments of public affairs. If a king cannot give protection to citizens from thieves and rogues, both in the government service and in public affairs, he has no right to exact taxes from them. In other words, the king or the government that taxes can levy taxes from the citizens only if the king or government is able to give protection to the citizens from thieves and rogues. So that's some advice. You protect them from impious ministers and also from thieves and rogues, yes. The king is supposed to be pious. In whose state and cities the general populace strictly observes the system of 8 social orders of vana and ashrama. So that's what they want to tell him. That you'll be doing your job properly when everyone is observing vana and ashrama. And we're all citizens engaged in worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead by their particular occupation. O noble one, so there's some purport here that we'll read in a few moments. O noble one, if the king sees that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original cause of the cosmic manifestation, and the Supersoul within everyone is worshipped, then the Lord will be satisfied. Here, another duty. Let everyone worship the Lord. Because Vena had stopped the sacrifices. Jagyavai Vishnu. The sacrifices are meant to please Krishna. So the sages are advising him that Krishna will be pleased when you perform your duty. Your duty is not only to stop the rogues and the thieves and all their different forms, but your duty is also to make sure that all the citizens are performing their own duties according to Varnashrama, which means yatta pravatabhutanam yena savamidam tatam, by pleasing the Lord, worshipping the Supreme Lord through performance of duties. So performance of duties is one way to worship the Lord. And in text 20, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is worshipped by the great demigods, controllers of universal affairs. When he is satisfied, nothing is impossible to achieve. For this reason, all the demigods, presiding deities of different planets, as well as all the inhabitants of their planets, they take great pleasure in offering all kinds of paraphernalia for his worship. Dear King, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, along with the predominating deities, is the enjoyer of the results of all sacrifices in all planets. Bhoktaram Jagatapasam Savalokamaheshwaram. The Supreme Lord is the sum total of the three Vedas, the owner of everything, and the ultimate goal of all austerity. Therefore, your countrymen should engage in performing various sacrifices for your elevation. In other words, if they worship the Lord, you will be benefited. So your responsibility is to make sure that they worship the Lord. It will be the best thing for them. It will please the Lord, and he will be pleased with you. And for one who has pleased the Lord, there is nothing that he can't achieve. Therefore, your countrymen should engage in performing various sacrifices for your elevation. Indeed, you should always direct them towards the offering of sacrifices. When all the Brahmins engage in performing sacrifices in your kingdom, all the demigods who are plenary expansions of the Lord will be very much satisfied by their activities, and they will give you your desired results. Therefore, O hero, do not stop the sacrificial performances. If you stop them, you will disrespect the demigods. So they've spoken very, very sweetly to King Vena, disguising their anger, not truly trusting that he would be able to change his nature, but they were trying to just give him good advice. We'll read some of the parts of Prabhupada's purports. Here's to text 18. The state's duty and citizens' duty are very nicely explained in this verse, that everyone should worship the Lord by the performance of their duties. The activities of the government head or king, as well as the activities of the citizens, should be so directed that ultimately everyone engages in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The king or government head is supposed to be the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and is therefore supposed to see that things are going on nicely and that the citizens are situated in the scientific social order comprised of the four varnas and four ashramas. In the Vishnu Purana, it is stated that unless people are educated or situated in the scientific social order comprised of four varnas and four ashramas, society can never be considered real human society, nor can it make any advancement towards the ultimate goal of human life. It is the duty of the government to see that things go on in terms of varna and ashrama. In other words, the society should be organized in the scientific way. Chaturvarna maya shishtam guna karma vibhagasa, as Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, so that everyone knows their duties and everyone should do their duties for the pleasure of the Lord. And the king's job, responsibility, his duty is to see everyone is doing their duties. Prabhupada continues, thus the Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Sudras and Vaishyas must execute their prescribed duties as these duties are stated in the Shastras. In this way, everyone can satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. The king or government head has to see that the citizens are thus engaged. In other words, the state or the government must not deviate from its duty by declaring that the state is a secular one, which has no interest in whether or not the people advance in Vanashrama Dharma. Today, people engaged in government service and people who rule over the citizens have no respect for the Vanashrama Dharma. They complacently feel that the state is secular. In such a government, no one can be happy. The people must follow the Vanashrama Dharma, and the king must see that they are following it nicely. So that was in Prabhupada's purport to the verse explaining that the king's duty is that everyone should do their duties, their Vanashrama duties, for the pleasure of the Lord. Now, the sages tell the king that the Lord is the Lord of the entire world and he should be worshipped. Prabhupada's purport. It is a fact that the government's duty is to see that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is satisfied by the activities of the people, as well as by the activities of the government. There is no possibility of happiness if the government or citizenry have no idea of Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the original cause of the cosmic manifestation. There is no possibility of happiness if they have no knowledge of Bhuta Bhavana, or the Viswatma, or the Supersoul, the soul of everyone's soul. The conclusion is that without engaging in devotional service, neither the citizens nor the government can be happy in any way. At the present moment, neither the king nor the government governing body is interested in seeing that the people are engaged in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Rather, they are more interested in advancing the machinery of sense gratification. Consequently, they are becoming more and more implicated in the complex machinery of the stringent laws of nature. People should be freed from the entanglement of the three modes of material nature, and the only process by which this is possible is surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is advised in the Bhagavad Gita. Unfortunately, neither the government nor the people in general have any idea of this. They are simply interested in sense gratification and being happy in this life. The word Nija Shashane, in his own governmental duty, indicates that both the government and the citizens are responsible for the execution of Vanashrama Dharma. Once the populace is situated in Vanashrama Dharma, there is every possibility of real life and prosperity both in this world and in the next. And the final purport that we'll read, where Prabhupada explains that all kinds of paraphernalia, or rather the verse explains that if one worships the Lord in this way, then there is nothing impossible for you, O King, to achieve. So everything, all paraphernalia should be engaged in his worship. Purport. All Vedic civilization is summarized in this verse. All living entities, either on this planet or on other planets, have to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead by their respective duties. When he is satisfied, all necessities of life are automatically supplied. In the Vedas, it is also stated, Eko bahunam yo vadadati kamam. From the Vedas, we understand that he is supplying everyone's necessities. And we can actually see that the lower animals, the birds and the bees, have no business or profession, yet they are not dying for want of food. They are all living in nature's way, and they all have the necessities of life provided, namely eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Human society, however, has artificially created a type of civilization which makes one forgetful of his relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Modern society even enables one to forget the Supreme Personality of Godhead's grace and mercy. Consequently, modern civilized man is always unhappy and in need of things. People do not know that the ultimate goal of life is to approach Lord Vishnu and satisfy him. So everyone forgets that it is only by the grace of God that we are alive, that we breathe, that we have water. And instead of appreciating Krishna and living according to his system, we say, no, we have a new system. And we're going to do it this way and that way and this way and that way. And the result is that the air is being polluted, the water is being polluted, the soil is being poisoned, the birds are dying, the animals are going, are being killed, and eventually the oil is being pulled out, more and more earthquakes, bigger cyclones, global warming, the water gets warmer, the ice, polar ices melt. This is the result of the exploitive mentality and the exploitive system, rather than doing it Krishna's way and appreciating that he's giving everything. No, we have a better way, because we're not satisfied with what he gives us. We want more, exploit, squeeze, and the result is no one is happy. Consequently, modern civilized man is always unhappy and in need of things. And we're trying to be happy, but the world is itself, the whole environment is miserable, and we live in the environment. So how could we be happy? People do not know that the ultimate goal of life is to approach Lord Vishnu and satisfy him. And when the environmentalists talk, what they want is to keep up the same standard of sense enjoyment and exploitation, and yet somehow protect the environment. And the answer is that it is not sustainable. Krishna's plan, Krishna's method is the way. Simple living, high thinking. The happiness comes from a different realm, not just from the senses. That is Krishna's idea. Live simply. Be satisfied, healthy, happy, living simply. And enjoy happiness within. And the basic, simple happinesses of life that are real happiness. Love, affection, family, dealing with the earth, the natural beauty of everything. Wholesome happiness. So, people do not know that the ultimate goal of life is to approach Lord Vishnu and satisfy him. So, live in that way, in a simple way. Chant Hare Krishna. And work for his pleasure, and use what paraphernalia is given to you for his pleasure. So, people do not know that the ultimate goal of life is to approach Lord Vishnu and satisfy him. They have taken this materialistic way of life as everything, and have become captivated by materialistic activities. Indeed, their leaders are always encouraging them to follow this path, and the general populace, being ignorant of the laws of God, are following their blind leaders down the path of unhappiness. In order to rectify this world situation, all people should be trained in Krishna consciousness and act in accordance with the Vanashrama system. The state should also see that the people are engaged in satisfying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the primary duty of the state. The Krishna consciousness movement was started to convince the general populace to adopt the best process by which to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead and thus solve all problems. Another purpose of ISKCON. Okay, thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Yeah.
I was inspired by the soldiers.
Yes.
And I didn't expect that they were aware of this mysterious nature.
Yeah.
So what response can we give if the question is asked? Sages should have known better.
Well, they tried and hoped for the best, and they were prepared to act if it didn't work out. And what was their choice? So they took the simplest choice. And they gave Venu a chance, basically, to come up. So they, we can see also they took responsibility for what they did too. They just didn't say, "Well, we did something and then left." They did what they thought they had. Said, when you're dealing with politics and management, you never know how it's going to work out, even if you're a sage. So they. because you don't know how the material nature and the free will of the living entity is going to react to it. So therefore, because of those reasons, the sages don't like to get entangled generally, but they had to in this case. So they had to make a managerial decision, and it didn't work out. And as you're pointing out, there probably were people were criticizing the sages.
Ministers would have been.
Yeah.
Because they didn't agree.
Yeah. See, I told you. There's lessons in that one, isn't it? Any other questions? Good comments? Questions or comments? Yes.
Maharaj, what's worse? No monarchy or a monarchy that's not following good conscious principle?
Well, it's a false question because in the sense that if you have no monarchy, you have to have another form of government. So the people won't accept a monarchy for long that isn't following religious principles, because they're not interested in the people. They're just in sense gratification, and the people start thinking, we're working so hard, we're giving them the money to support their lavish, sinful lifestyle. Let's rip them down. So that the monarchy without religious principles doesn't work. So if the question is, which is worth, an irreligious monarch or an irreligious government, Prabhupada answers that in the first canto by saying, when the monarchy is bad, instead of replacing it by a government of the people, by the people, it's better to have the right thing. So we opt for another answer rather than this, which would you rather be in. Prabhupada does, his answer is that, and what we just read, his answer was also that it won't make any difference, more or less. Because when the people vote, if they're acting like animals, they'll just vote in a big animal. So better they become religious and vote in the most religious person. That's another one of Prabhupada's suggestions. In this world right now, there aren't very many monarchies, even if the people are, even if they're sinful. And whatever monarchies are there are generally figurehead. Yeah. But people do want a monarchy. It seems they naturally have such an attraction to royalty because there's something divine in it. There's a divine empowerment, but the royalty has to be truly royal. Not base for it to work. Any other? Okay, we'll stop. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. So we'll continue tomorrow. We'll hear how Vena responds to the humble entreaties of the sages.